Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from the West Country of the United Kingdom is John Wilson. John is the Chief Executive of whistleblowing hotline provider ExpoLink. John, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
You're very welcome, Adam. Very good to talk to you.
So what precipitated this conversation was your firm released its whistleblowing benchmark report, which I found fascinating to read. And one of the most interesting findings to me is the decline in phone-based reporting, with it now accounting for just less than half of total reports. Where's the biggest growth now, and what do you see for the future?
Good question, Adam. I think you're right. Obviously, over time, the use of the telephone has declined. I think what we find interesting, actually, is in many ways just how slow that decline has been, because given that in many ways our lives are moving online, so it's not surprising there's been a growth in web channels and other online channels. The telephone decline has actually been quite slow, and actually it still accounts for, it is the single most used channel. So where people have the choice of picking up the phone and speaking to someone, it is the single most used channel, and I think that's really quite a key point here.
Yeah, just do you have a sense of why it is still the most? Is it just that's what people are used to, or they really want the interaction of back and forth discussion?
I think people are used to it, and I think that for those people that are happy to talk to somebody, I think often it's overlooked just kind of how stressful it can be to make a whistleblowing report. And if you've got a very good sort of empathetic style of call handling, I think that people appreciate that, and they find the experience a more comfortable one. So I think we'll discuss this perhaps as we go through the call. I mean, the key thing is, if you're putting in place a hotline, is to give people a choice. And certainly it is far, far, far too early to write off speaking to somebody as being one of the key choices that people should have when contemplating making their report.
Good point. So now in 2018, your survey saw a rise in anonymous reporting. What's the significance of it, or is it significance or a survey blip?
I think maybe linking back to the first point I was making, Adam, in that when you look at people who make reports using online channels, they don't have the interaction. They're actually more likely to remain anonymous. So I think those two facts are linked. As we see a slight decline in telephone reporting and an increase in web reporting, I think people are more likely to stay anonymous. Certainly our data shows that anonymous reporting is noticeably higher on the online channels. On the telephone, because there's that interaction, people can be given a more compelling reason to perhaps disclose their identity. And that's something which doesn't happen online. People really can be totally anonymous online, and there's nothing going to persuade them otherwise. One of the more interesting features that came out of this year's data, and perhaps the real story, is around an almost 50%, a 47% increase in confidential reporting. 11% of people who made reports shared their identity with us because they realized the value of doing that, but asked us not to share their identity with their employer. And this kind of indicates that people are more prepared to speak up, but becoming more sophisticated in doing so. They realize the value of making a report and having a dialogue, but don't want to risk exposing themselves from the outset. And I think organizations need to bear this in mind and respond to that behavioral change. And by and large, people do want to see anonymity rates declining. And to do that, we need to make it easier for people to speak up.
One of the ongoing concerns when it comes to anonymity is whether anonymous reports are as trustworthy as those that aren't anonymous. Are you seeing the fear to be a warranted one?
I think if somebody contemplating a hotline for the first time asks, is it possible we will receive malicious reports? So in other words, anonymity is just a cloak for people to get up to mischief. The answer is obviously yes, that might happen. The evidence is it happens very infrequently, and actually I would argue that if as an organization you are receiving a very high number of malicious reports, whilst the content of those reports may substantially be untrue, actually you as an organization have got a problem. Because you clearly have people within the business who want to make malicious reports, and that suggests you have got an issue which needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I think it's a good point there that it's if your reports are malicious, it may be symptomatic of something else. And I've seen enough other data that suggests the verification rate for anonymous calls is very similar to that for non. Now, can you walk us through some of the most common types of issues reported? And, because what was notable to me is that such a huge percentage seemed to be HR related, which is consistent from what I've heard before, but it's still worth discussing.
I think in terms of the type of issues that are reported, there are some pretty consistent trends, and certainly HR has always been one of the issues that accounts for a pretty high percentage of reports. And although there are some really interesting differences, I mean, in the UK, it accounts for about 22% of our reports, whereas in the US, it's over 40%. And I think some of that reflects, trust issues within HR teams, particularly in very large organizations. You might have a central HR team, but a very dispersed workforce. And people find that using the hotline is a way of getting their concerns or their questions addressed. And so sometimes the instance of HR reporting the high incidents might suggest that there are some changes a business could make in terms of how its HR teams function. I think, though, within HR, we're also picking up some potentially really quite serious issues around harassment and bullying and so on. And I think that those issues, whilst they may be personal issues, could also be systemic and could be indicative of a culture within the business. So some HR issues are going to be really quite serious as well. But HR has always been a high category for all reporting lines. Other issues that come up would be around theft and fraud, bribery and corruption, and safety issues. So the trends are pretty consistent, but we see spikes. So on the back of the Me Too movement, we have seen a spike around sort of sexual harassment reporting, for example.
Not surprising at all. Now, I think as you started talking about these variations and spikes, I think one of the most interesting part of the report is the variations by country in terms of everything from how people reported, whether it was by phone or app or the web, and what the issues are. Can you take us through a few of them and what compliance professionals should be thinking about as a result?
There are a few examples that really stand out in this year's benchmarking report. So whilst we've had that consistency I talked about for the big issues, HR, bullying, discrimination and harassment and so on, they feature within the top three for most countries. But on certain issues, we see some real variations. So in China, for example, China receives almost 10 times more bribery and corruption reports than the global average. Mexico and Chile have an abnormally high number of theft and fraud related reports. And France and Japan report bullying, discrimination and harassment at twice the global average. So there are some interesting features that stand out from this year's data.
That's fascinating. And it certainly seems like it's a good way to map one's risks as an organization by you sort of using the overall data to see what's likely to come up.
So I think absolutely, because I think the things we see are not just the issues that come up within certain countries which stand out, But also, some countries definitely prefer to be anonymous. And that might be because they are concerned about retaliation, or where a country has a more established speak-up culture, the UK, the US, parts of Europe, anonymity rates are quite low. And we've also noticed that the channels that people use will vary quite markedly. So places like China, Brazil, India, Germany, people seem to prefer making a report online, whereas in the UK, the US, the telephone is still the most popular. So what that might mean for compliance teams is you really can't second guess the needs or preferences of your employee base. And if you're looking to have an effective program, so you know your whistleblowing service, your hotline is giving you early warning of things going wrong within the business, then it's a risky strategy to deploy a single channel or a one-size-fits-all approach. So our sort of feeling on what might represent best practice is it makes sense to give people the widest possible means of making reports, allow some people to be anonymous, except they always will be, but don't mistrust those reports, understand the culture, and encourage people to use the phone when they want to. That encourages high levels of disclosure. They're often prepared to reveal their name, and the quality of the reports can be very high with that interaction that they have online with the operator on the phone line, but also offer people reporting apps as well, mobile apps. The demographic of the workforce makes quite a difference. So I think compliance teams can learn a lot from benchmarking data and realize that they have to have a pretty flexible approach. Don't try and have one size fits all, and use a number of different strategies to encourage people to come into the water. Because it's clear from our benchmarking data that people like to have choice, that there is no best channel. It's about choice, and different people will make a different choice depending on who they are and also perhaps where they are. So those are all factors that we see as starting to become really quite clear now for compliance teams.
No, I think those are all good points. And I think one other thing to recall is, you know, from the benchmarking data you provided, is that if people start looking at differences in reports by country, it may be just a reflection of global trends, which the benchmarking data shows. Or if your reports tend to be very different from what the global standards or benchmarks are showing, it may well be an indication of an issue you have at your organization. Well, John, thank you so much for taking the time to share these insights with us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.